I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Live from the chess set in Lady Painfort's study, it's A Wheezing Groaning Sound, the only podcast about Doctor Who. And today we're taking a trip to the Ark. So don't get monoid or refusian to listen. You're all just playing along, and none of us are doing this for the dodo.
Hey,
I'm Tom Neenan, and joining me are two men who are never afraid to get out their little one-eyed fellow and make him sick. It's...
Oh.
It's Mr. Paul Litchfield, Mr. John Ray.
Hey,
hello, boys. How you doing?
We're good. We're back. We're back, baby.
We're back.
We're back after a long time away.
It feels good. And we're back with the Ark. By the way, I never asked this, guys. Have you been watching any extracurricular Who while we've been away? You have?
Yes. Yes, I've definitely been watching extracurricular Who.
What have you been watching?
I've been watching Where's the Gummidge? That's very
Is it canon? The big question.
And Eureka. And no, I've actually just recently I've been watching some of the newer stuff because I haven't revisited them since they came out.
Yeah.
So I've been watching some O'Tenants and bits and bobs, going, oh yeah,
nice.
That's sort of fun.
Yeah,
A lot of it isn't, but a lot of it is. So I was having fun. There's a couple of old Doctor Who stories that we've been doing for Wheezing Groaning where I've just gone, oh, I'm just going to watch the next story now.
Mm. Oh, fun.
Which has been nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done that. I watched The Green Death the other day, and that is very good. That'll be a fun one to cover at some point,
yes.
I think.
Episode count on that one? It's a big one, isn't it?
It's a big one. It's a six-parter. It's one of those Pertwee six-parters.
It's a six one. Okay, it's not as bad. Some of them are eight, aren't
they? Okay.
Yeah. So that's quite fun.
Yeah, because only really, I mean, two episodes are just synthesizer Moog sounds.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours of weird library music.
Exactly. fantastic. Well, The Ark. Now, I it's been a while since I've done this, so I'll try and do it smoothly. The Ark, on TV but not. What if TV was, but you weren't watching The Ark? What was on to also TV, Paul?
One of our continuity officers is missing. let's have a little look, shall we? The Ark, it was on Saturday the 5th of March 1966 at 5:15.
Wow.
Beautiful. Wow. Now, of course, what I love about the BBC back then is programme started on BBC One at midday. Beautiful, beautiful.
Lovely.
And it started off with an interesting documentary called Making a Play.
Oh.
And this was part 7, and it's called The Set. And the blurb says this. Adrian Rendell, that's all immediately a brilliant name. Adrian Rendell checks in on the backstage staff and their efforts.
Oh. Okay.
Brilliant.
Sure.
Straight after that was a programme called Notice Board, Public Service Announcements. I can just imagine what that is.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Dog for sale.
Or weird things like, do not eat tzatziki. We do not know what it is yet. All right. And then, of course, Grandstand, which went on from 12:45 all the way up until 5:15 when Doctor Who The Ark started. Episode 1, The Steel Sky.
Ooh.
I love it that they used to give them subheading episode titles.
Yeah.
Lovely. And after that, you would have had Dixon of Dot Green. And the episode is called Face at the Window. And the blurb simply says this. Alice Leggett is old, lonely, but tough. Suddenly she dies. Fantastic.
It's Dr. Harold Shipman.
Yeah.
And then at 9 o'clock, what a beautiful thing. It was the Eurovision Song Contest.
Wow.
Live from Luxembourg.
I wonder if that's the Cliff one, or is that the 70s?
I'm not entirely sure yet. Yeah. And they, in the Radio Times Genome Blurb, they have every single act and every single song. It's like an entire page.
Wow.
But the funniest thing ever was that the Irish entry, the song is nothing remotely hilarious, but the man singing it was called Dick Rock.
Lovely stuff.
Dick Rock. Oh, he comes from a long line of rocks. Does that a dickie?
And the winner beautiful. The winner was Udo Jürgens.
Fantastic. Mm. And later on, after Eurovision Song Contest, which back then was a merciful 1 hour 45 minutes.
Wow.
Wow.
So super quick.
Mm. Yeah.
There was a programme then called BBC Three.
What?
I know. Amazing. BBC Three, ?
Mm.
And it just says, Linda Barron is appearing in Fatal Fascination at the Talk of the Town Theatre and Restaurant in London.
Wow, okay.
So I presume she does Act One during the starters.
Isn't that Nurse Gladys Emmanuel?
It is.
Yes, wow. It is.
Wow,
fantastic.
And the space pirate from Enlightenment as well.
Yes, that's right. I forgot she's a space pirate. Oh, we must cover that episode. That's brilliant.
Hang on.
It's not. If you were watching BBC Two, and you'd have to wait a little longer for programmes to start at midday. You'd have to wait till 3:30 in the afternoon.
Blimey. Okay. It's worth it. I'm guessing it'll be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because you started off immediately with film, The Moment of Truth. And the blurb says, a French film with mostly English subtitles. Mostly.
Oh, that's good.
And then a little bit later on, you had a programme called Francis Durbridge Presents... A Game of Murder? Part 2. Jack Kerry leaves the murder scene to find Rupert Delaney. He hurries to his flat, only to find him murdered!
Whoa!
Oh my God.
So it's just endless murder.
Yeah.
And a bit later on, you had Wicker's World.
Yay!
Oh, at 8:45. And it's got this subheading blurb. It goes, Wicker's World with Alan Wicker... Open brackets, it's not part of their seaman-like duties to dance. Close brackets. Right? And it says, Alan joins the passengers on a luxury £15 a day cruise.
Oh, wow. £15 a day?
Luxury £15 a day cruise. Would Sir care for some more spam? Absolutely spoiling us on this luxury cruise. Would Sir care to have his Watney Brown bitter served in a champagne flip? Luxury!
Yes, just
luxury.
Put it down. I'm still using this oar. Yeah.
Would Sir care to stub out his Benson and Edges on my palm of my end? No! Luxury cruises is Doris. Fantastic. And just after that was a program called, well, we all know this, it's Late Night Lineup. And it actually says, why not stay up just a little bit longer with Dennis Tuhoy, amazing name, Joan Bakewell, Michael Dean, and whoever else turns up.
Booking policies were very relaxed in those days, weren't they?
I just left the door open.
Whoever else turns
up. Guy walks in like...
Oliver Reed?
Yes, that's right. Tries to kiss Joan Bakewell.
Yeah.
You don't know me, I'm just a tramp that's wandered in, but I've got several thoughts I'd like to talk to you all about cubism. All right, sit down then. Anyway, that was your joy on BBC One and BBC Two.
Huzzah!
All right.
Very good, but
the
why? Would
the
you be watching anything else than the Ark? Let's crack on with the... Is it called the Steel Sky?
Mm-hmm.
The Steel Sky.
Steel Sky.
Well, what do we see first? We see a lizard. Mm. We see a toucan. And then we see a mop. A man wearing a mop with an eyeball in his mouth.
Yeah.
Now, John, you've got some pertinent information about this, haven't you?
Oh, hello.
Well, just that it was a man with a mop on his head with a ping pong ball in his mouth. That's how they did it.
And I remember... I remember watching it going, that eye action's really good. It's really fluid. Yeah. And now knowing it's just in someone's mouth.
Mm-hmm. It's so weird.
No wonder they all got COVID.
Also, so the very first shot is just a toucan wandering over a lizard.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but it looks like someone's just chucked it into frame onto the lizard. The lizard's gone, oh, fuck this, and ran off.
I mean, it's very inventive. Like, they've created the monoids. We can discuss the monoids in more detail later. But, like, that first image, like you say, it's a very fluid movement. You're like, oh. And then you sort of look closely, like, oh, I know what they've done there. That is, it's very ingenious in a way.
Yeah.
Mm. They've gone to Whipsnade Zoo, haven't they? And shoved a camera in the petting section and introduced some species that should never have been co-introduced.
I mean, there's a fucking elephant in this later.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
Can you imagine 80s BBC having the budget to put an elephant in a studio?
Never happened.
Oh, it's on me foot.
Oh no, it's on the end credits.
Well, I would love to know what was the elephant on Blue Peter? What was that elephant called?
Oh gosh, yeah, it does.
Did
have
it have a
proper
name?
It genuinely did have a name. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that's how the eras line up and if that's the same one. I don't know. I'm gonna look it up.
That's
Lulu.
Lulu. It's round about the right time as well. Maybe that poor elephant was trotted out for every single thing.
Lulu the elephant was 1969.
Oh, okay. So a bit after this then.
So yeah, made him want to shout, didn't it? When it.
Yeah.
it's on my foot. Yeah.
So that's how Lulu got the idea for the song. It stood on a foot and went. It's on me fucking foot. And they went, what are you going
to take? This elephant's done a shit.
We're going to tweak the lyrics, Lulu. It's going to be a hit.
And it was. Fair play to her. So did they go, it's all on film this, right? So did they go to a zoo or something? Because it looks impressive. I actually think that the start of it with the sort of the film and the jungle looks really good.
Looks brilliant, doesn't it?
Mm.
And then it cuts to a monoid receptionist.
Yeah.
Like they're all like doing clerical courses and stuff. This is really lovely. There's like a really humdrum office, but with monoids just getting on with work.
Because the doctor arrives, got a lovely materialization shot.
Beautiful materialization
mm-hmm.
shot.
Mm-hmm. And Dodo comes out sneezing all over the goddamn place. Mm. Honestly,
this is a very COVID-based Doctor Who story, isn't it?
Mm. It is. Yeah, it's more. You know, they've actually, and they're wearing masks at one point as well. It's actually quite prescient. It's
very prescient.
Yeah, and so they have a look around. And they're trying to work out where they are because the jungle, like you say, has loads of animals that don't belong together. They've got Indian elephants and they've got sort of toucans and somewhere over there's like a polar bear somewhere, I'm sure as well. And it's all, none of it makes sense.
No.
The doctor deduces that they might be in some sort of indoor adventure park.
Yeah.
And Dodo's come dressed out as Eric from Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. What does she say she's wearing like some Bonza gear? Or, like she's got loads of...
She says gear, yeah, as in good. Yeah. That's gear.
She's the young one, isn't she? She's meant to be young. I mean,
she's
young
and hip and crazy, isn't she?
Yeah, but she's written as like young.
Yeah.
But then we cut to the set of Blankety Blank, where, where there's a trial going on.
And the trial seems to be a man is going to be executed because he left the heating on.
Yes.
The most British of crimes.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. All the terrapins are floating dead in their tank. And you think what they're going to do, shoot him, gas him? No, they sort of miniaturise him. It's amazing.
They do. They're going to make him small and shove him up a monoid's bum. That is the punishment for...
They have to operate the eyeball.
Yeah.
I sentence you to become a monoid pessary for the next month. Oh, God, it's a fair cup.
You'll be working in the sweet corn mine.
Yeah. Oh, God. Jonathan Rain, I use your full name to denote trouble. What I love is this little miniaturization sequence looks better than some of the effects 30, 40 years later.
Yeah. It really does, doesn't it? It looks great.
Well, not only that, the sets in this look better than anything 30, 40 years later.
Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in this.
Yeah,
they've got good perspective stuff. So the sky, like you say, the sky sort of continues on, doesn't it? It's sort of a perspective trick. It looks really good. Then we have Eric Elliott playing the senior guardian. What a performance.
Fine actor, that son.
That is, he's sort of everything he does. And he's like creepy as well. He's got this weird energy all the way through. I love it.
He's utterly baffling and beguiling, isn't he?
He really is. His choices.
Is that how you're going to deliver that line? Yeah, okay, fine. He's committed to it, though. That's what I admire about him.
He's only in one episode, so it doesn't matter too much.
Exactly, and he's dying for a lot of it, so we can sort of hide him there. So yeah, but then the Doctor discovers that there's a picture of, there's a cave painting of a zebra with two heads. That's never brought up again. Don't know what that's meant to be about.
No,
that's fine. maybe
Doctor Doolittle lives here. Don't worry about that.
They get found anyway, and they are introduced to the Ark, which is where everyone's been lots of people have been miniaturized, haven't they? And put in little trays in a freezer.
Yeah, amazingly clear what's going on. But
Well, it's so strange because we've also talked about Ark in space, and this is almost the same sort of thing. It's about storage, but this time they've actually come up with an even better idea. Instead of full size people, they just miniaturize them and then put them on essentially like a tea trolley.
We're going to leave you there now.
Yeah.
You lay your head on this bulb and biscuit, you'll be fine.
And thank goodness the human race have got sort of is it a slave race? It's sort of, the politics of this story are a bit dodgy, aren't they?
Yeah. They are definitely a slave race, the Monoids, aren't they? They're the worker bees, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. They don't even speak and...
Yes.
They use sign language, don't they?
They can speak. Oh, the sign language is amazing.
Mm.
Yeah. So we've got this human race where they've been going for millions, is it millions of years? Certainly we're in the future by lots of millions of years.
They are 10 million years into the future.
10 million years.
Yeah.
And they're on a 700 year journey, aren't they, to a distant planet called, and is it Refusus?
Refusus.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. And apparently they're going there on a hunch.
They are. They just they hope that they will be accepted by them. I mean, the planet's called Refuse Us.
Mm.
So that is a leap that they think they're going to be welcomed in, is all I'll say.
We reserve the right to refuse this service.
We reserve the right to refuse this entry.
Yeah.
But they do sort of go, well, not entirely sure. I'm just going to be there when we arrive. Oh, okay.
That's weird. It's weird that you've gone 700 years for that.
So we've got a bit bored and we've decided to shrink everyone.
Exactly. It's just something to do, something to do. Mm. And there's a lovely bit where Dodo does a no-no on a big toe. That's all I wrote.
Yeah, because they're building a big old statue.
Big old statue of man.
Yeah. Yes.
Which they say will keep people occupied for the 700-year journey.
How big is that? It doesn't look that big, the statue.
No.
What is it? It must take about 9 months to do one cuticle. It's bloody Spanish builders for your siestas. Get a move on.
So yeah, they're doing that. Meanwhile, and then at one point they are taken away, and the Monoids are driving a vehicle that's the most annoying sounding vehicle I've ever heard.
So funny!
Yeah. It's amazing. It's like they mic'd up every single bit of the car. It's just really let's put 8 mics on that.
Yeah. It's horrible, isn't it?
It drowns out every other noise.
Yeah. They've got the Monoid at the front there as well. He's just sort of looking he's just sort of a bored guy in a garage or something.
Yeah.
And it's just deafening sound. It's
just this crankshaft and the gear's gone in wrong. And I'm half expecting at some point for them to just have a comedy horn as they go along.
I'm hoping it's on a track, because at some point someone will say to the driver, do you know where we're going? And he'll say, ooh, because he's got a ping pong ball in his mouth. And there's a mop over his eyes, so he can't see. So no wonder speak.
No wonder the poor Monoids never learned to speak, because in evolutionary terms, their eye comes out of their fucking mouth.
But then, so we're heading towards... I mean, I've been trying to go in detail, but I guess... what the main things about episode one is that they arrive and people are sort of skeptical and they find out what's been going on. They go traveling on the 700 year journey, but then Dodo infects everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Dodo infects everyone. And then in episode two, you even get the idea that maybe Stephen might have had an STD that's also going around.
This is what I was going to say. If this was a Troughton episode, they'd all get VD.
Yeah.
the whole story's called The Clap.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, they haven't. They've sort of... Although, what's weird is they've apparently cured the common cold, but no one's immune to the common cold.
Mm. No.
Which is weird. Which is a very weird decision.
Yeah.
So they're in trouble because they... I mean, this is one of the first instances where the Doctor arrives and people accuse the Doctor of something and the Doctor is 100% guilty of what's happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wrote down the same thing. This is the first time where they go, you shouldn't be here, and look what you've fucking done!
Yeah.
You're destroying our entire civilization just because you appeared on a whim!
Yeah, the Doctor has fucked up. So then we go into episode two, and they're all locked up, right? I mean, absolutely correctly so. They are quarantined.
They are locked up. They're going to go on trial, as one of them says, for infecting mankind.
Yeah. Fair enough. So they're going to be put on trial, and we're going to get a trial scene, a little kangaroo court, which is very fun because there's someone in there who really has a thing against him, doesn't he? He really hates him.
And based on the animals outside, it's an actual kangaroo as well.
Yeah. You see, that could have been... I don't know. That was a missed opportunity.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it's... So then here's a bit I didn't quite understand. So they're going to try and cure Stephen, who's also got a bit of a fever, and the old man, who's sort of wailing away on his bed.
Oh, no.
But commenting on everything in a really annoying way.
Yeah.
So they decide, actually, because they've infected all of mankind by just turning up, they're going to be ejected into space.
Yes.
Yeah. but then the poor old, I'm very ill, I've just soiled my toga. He immediately pardons them.
He does, by kind of the tannoy. That's quite extraordinary.
So I know that they arrived and they're killing me, but let them go. You all right, Dad?
Yeah. We haven't actually mentioned the clothes. Everyone in the future is wearing pants and that curtain your nan used to have to separate the hall from the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they wear in the future. Hmm. They're very revealing. There's a few shows being like, oh my God, there's blokes there just wearing pants and little bits of ribbon.
Yeah.
Very alarming.
That's why the journey's taking 700 years. It was actually, all the engineers were perverts. They can actually get there in 2 weeks. Yeah. Oh, I reckon it'll take 700 years to get there, can it? Climbing!
Yeah, don't speed up the process. So then the Doctor, sort of part of their thing is that the Doctor has to cure them, doesn't he? That's sort of what...
Yeah, the Doctor must find... You must find a cure, Doctor!
Find a cure for me! And then the Doctor sort of has a little laboratory, massive boom shot, but we'll
a lot of boom shadows in this as well.
There's so many boom shadows.
Yeah.
And doesn't the Doctor at one point ask, don't they need something from animals? Because there's a montage where they sort of are collecting... They're like feeding the elephant, and I couldn't work out whether that was for the... Was that for the medicine, or was that... I didn't know what that was about.
I couldn't work it out. But the guy in the bed was like, bring me a monkey to have sex. Did it cure you? No, but it was worth a try.
Which animal is the softest to fuck? Oh, God.
I would say he's delirious, but he's always saying that.
he said that before he was ill, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's a lot of monoids carrying out Pomeranians and very, 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 very confused koalas.
And then they say, no wonder, this is why we got the ping pong balls in our mouth. Yeah. Stop him getting tempted.
Any holes are gold.
Oh my God.
It's an S-Pod thing. The podcast revisiting S Club 7's insane TV show.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone's binge-watched this. Anyone who's not on drugs.
Thank you for bringing this into my life. It was honestly truly appalling.
Guests helped me analyse the show in more detail than anyone ever asked for.
It feels weird to me to say the phrase sex object in a show that was aimed at six-year-olds.
Do you think there's one of the problems with the show is that 7 is too much?
It's an S-Pod thing from Great Big Owl.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, so the doctor's sort of he's going to experiment and make an antidote.
Yes.
That's what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. And there's a weird scene between some monoids. They're doing like secret like monoid media messages like hand space, keep your eye out, or whatever it bloody means.
Yeah.
And then the doctor's experimenting. And then doesn't he, a little bit later, he starts like randomly amputating things?
And there's that really weird bit where he spills the potion and he just picks up a monoid, turns him on his head and uses it to clean up.
It's like just, the Magician's Apprentice, isn't it?
Yeah. He then puts him in really that bucket thing and squashes his head to get all the potion out.
He might as well just scratch his ass, put it in a beaker. Yeah. Just wash your hands, Doctor, and just think a little bit about what you're doing. It's so haphazard what he's doing. You're all dying, are you? Oh, yes, I'll do something.
But luckily, it works. And Stephen gets better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the second Stephen's better, they go, it works. And I was like, leave it a bit, guys.
This isn't science. Seconds. One person exactly. Is she goes running around the whole place going, Stephen's feeling better. It worked.
Half hour later, he shut his lungs out. It's like, oh, hang on.
Also, I was thinking...
There might be side effects.
Also, at this point, you'd want to say, yeah, but he's from your time where the cold isn't a problem.
Yeah.
So him feeling better isn't really the breakthrough you think it is.
No, it's the evidence of nothing.
Yeah.
Exactly. And also, if he's feeling better, that means he's going to go and celebrate, which means at least 9 of them are going to come down with another STD.
Yeah.
He's having an all-night rave. Why?
And then they just go, well, because monoids have been dropping like flies at this point, haven't they? There's like no, I don't think any, as one human died of the cold, but like hundreds of monoids have
died. Want to know that when they die, it's like in Reeves and Morton where they die and then the ping pong ball falls out and they disappear.
There's something going on.
Now that I am dead, who would take my beloved monoid to be baptized?
Oh my god.
Oh boy. Is it landing day, Tom?
Stephen was thrown out of his lodgings for erratic behaviour.
Oh, but yeah, luckily they're well, and so sort of then it's the classic thank you, Doctor. Even though people have died, and if you'd never turned up, we would have been fine.
Yeah.
They sort of go, thank you. And then the guy who was against him in court says, in a lovely fluffed line, says, sorry I misjudged you.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So, and then they're off into the great unknown again. And that is the end of the arc. Wait.
Or is it?
I was so kind of not tuned into this episode.
Yeah.
That when they got in and went, thank you, Doctor, and he went, I thought... Oh, I must have watched all four. Yeah.
Fair enough.
But then,
But then they come back.
Why? Does this happen? Does Doctor Who do this a lot? At the end of the demons, does he come back 100 years in the future to check there are no more demons? Or what? I don't know. Is this what he does?
I suppose it's like the Time Lord equivalent of going, oh, Christ, I left the gas on. Just has to go back to a planet and check.
There needs to be a conversation here somewhere where one of them's going, why the fuck are we back here?
Yeah, it's baffling because they turn up back in the jungle and they're like, oh, we've only been away. Dodo's like, we've only been away a few minutes. And like, Dodo, have you not, have you not worked out yet?
You stupid bitch, it's 600 years in the future, what are you talking about? It's a fucking time machine.
And you can tell it's they've travelled in the future because the statue has been finished.
Yeah.
But, the statue's a bloody monoid!
Oh my
end
god.
Of part two.
That's a really good ending, though. Yeah. That's brilliant.
It's a really good ending.
That should have been the ending to the entire story.
Oh, yeah, just like...
Like Planet of the Apes.
You blew it up, damn you all to hell.
Yeah.
Or the ending is just Hartnell with his dick out. 400 foot tall.
Imagine if they built
no explanation as to why. With him sitting on the end of his own dick waving.
And a Merry Christmas to all of you at home.
Actually, it would be even more bleak because back then Doctor Who never had the sting. It just faded out. So it's just Hartnell sat on his own glands. Waving at them as it fades out.
Oh my god. That would be so good if they'd made the statue. They hated him so much when he was there that they dedicated 700 years to building a statue of him with his dick out.
Dude, that's a replacement, a dick in a pair of balls.
Oh my god. So but then twist upon twist as we rejoin for episode 3.
There's been a revolution.
There's been a bloody revolution. The monoids can now talk.
Yeah,
they've got voice boxes now.
But they have to touch all the time in a really awkward way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit, you know.
And one of them's voiced by the guy who does Zippy. I've forgotten his name.
Roy Skelton.
Oh, really?
Roy Skelton, yeah. And it's like proto Zippy.
It is.
The doctor's here. Oh, no.
Yeah, because Roy Skelton is sort of number one. They're not given names, are they?
No.
There's number one, and he's the leader.
And they, when they find the doctor again, they immediately arrest them and take them to the security kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are two sets now.
The roles have been reversed because one of the first things you see is a human person who is now a slave, and he drops a plate and he gets executed immediately.
By some steam.
By some steam, yeah.
Very
weird.
Yeah,
and so now the humans are like the slave race, and one of them looks like the sort of bastard offspring of Bob Monkhouse and Michael Ironside.
He does!
Yes.
Like, they just gene spliced those two actors together.
They did. And, that actor, and you got, is very, and you get dour. Him, yeah.
Isn't he? He's a bit too dour, isn't he?
Bit too dour.
Yeah, I think so. So they're going to land. They've now decided that they are going to land on Refusus. But number one has a plan that they're not going to allow humans to join them.
No. Cheeky buggers.
Yeah. So like I say, we're not going to go into the politics of, like, you know, oh, if you, anyway, yeah, it's all very dodgy that they sort of go, oh, if you give the monoids any power, then they're only going to start, you know, infighting and going, turning against us. It's a bit, it's not very nice. So then they head on down to Refusus, some of them.
And for some reason they go, and I tell you what we're going to do, we finally reached this planet and we're very angry with you, Doctor, so we're going to send you there as some sort of rudimentary search part. Why?
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know why they go, yeah.
You did it. Yeah, so they land on Refusus. My favourite thing is when Dodo is talking to the number two monoid.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, well, then we'll have to get all the humans onto the planet. And then the number two monarch goes, that won't take very long. And then Dodo's like, oh, because you're going to kill them all. And he's like, No.
Okay. I didn't say that.
Yeah.
No, I meant because they're very small.
Yeah.
And we're very good at logistics. That's how it went.
And we've developed a rather good cricket bowl over the years. And we're going to throw them all under overarm.
Overarm.
Shut up!
We're just going to open the door and drop kick them out. It's fine.
Yeah. And then suddenly the Doctor finds like a very palatial area on the planet.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Lovely, like a Holiday Inn. It's lovely. Yeah.
But no one's there.
No one's there, though.
Number two monoid decides that the way, if you enter a lovely palace and no one's there, is to fuck shit up.
Yes.
So weird.
Yeah.
Is to immediately trash it.
Yeah.
Like he's a punk rocker monoid. Yeah. Wants to throw a TV set out the window.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that's me. Rather than, like, going, hello, they just starts out destroying the place, and then they hear a voice that tells them to stop.
Oi, because, stop course, that. Yeah. Who do you think you are, working for Hermes?
Yeah. So weird. So, yeah, so then it turns out that the Refusians...
Are invisible.
Invisible.
I mean, fuck off.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if there's ever... if I remember watching anything, I remember watching Supergirl the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where Faye Dunaway is this witch, and she sends a dragon to kill Supergirl, and it gets there, and it's invisible. It's like, fuck off. Just say you can't afford to make something that you want to make, and then you've made
invisible. But weirdly, they've made the rod that breaks their own backs, because they know they're invisible, and then they spend a lot of time and energy manipulating the set to make it look like they're there.
Exactly. You see so many fucking strings. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
I know. The bit with the flowers going back in the vase, and you can see every string.
It's annoying. Like, yeah, clearly they spent a lot of money on the elephant and the monoi costume, and then they didn't know what the Refusians were going to look like.
Someone should have said, hey, what about the elephant in the room?
Yeah.
What do you mean? I mean, there's a literal elephant there.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant that we'd run out of money.
No, there's literally an elephant. We best send it back to the zoo. Don't need it anymore.
What I was thinking was going to... What I was thinking was going to happen was that the Refusians were going to actually be the monoids themselves even further into the future that had become invisible out of shame for what they'd done, and then the monoids would learn their lesson at the end, and then the Doctor could fuck off and go, yes, you see, it all makes perfect sense, Robin.
That would have been an interesting twist that they'd already explored. They retired.
I thought at first it was like ghosts of humans that had been killed there.
That would have been fun.
Oh, like I'd been sent there to, and died, and now there were ghosts. But again, didn't do that.
Instead, we find out it's because of a galactic accident or a galaxy accident is why they're invisible.
So it's like Casualty.
Yeah.
Have you been affected by a galaxy accident that wasn't your fault?
So Two goes to like summon the rest of the party to come down, but gets blowed up. He gets blown up by a monoid.
Gets all blowed up.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Because we know that there's a bomb somewhere on the ship, but we don't know where the bomb
is.
Jesus
Christ. No. I mean, literally one episode of story here, and the rest of it's just fumbling. Fumbling. It's a typical Doctor Who thing where you've got a good idea that doesn't stretch over four stories, so three of those are just fumbling. And this is classic of that.
I think from them sort of having the cold and then going away and finding out they've sort of caused damage to the Ark, or, you know, they've changed the kind of social makeup of the Ark, is really interesting. And I was really up for that. Mm. They sort of don't exploit that. Like, one thing we'll find out later, one thing I forgot to mention is that when the Doctor's dropped off at the TARDIS, the first time, in the first time frame, there is, I think, 30 seconds of a monoid reversing one of those horrible cars.
Really slowly. Yeah. So funny.
Vehicle reversing. Vehicle reversing.
It lasts so long.
And then when he stops, it falls apart and two clowns fall out.
It's really unnecessarily long.
I was howling with laughter watching this poor fucker with a ping pong ball in his mouth and a mop on his head having to not run anybody over.
The elephant just getting run over behind him, getting crushed.
And then it stampedes all over the boom man.
Oh, God. So they are...
And the boom falls in Hartnell's mouth.
I've become a monoid.
End of episode 3.
Next week, ?
Just him looking directly into camera with a huge boom mic sticking out of his mouth.
And then it would have to fade really slowly, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And then at the last second, this elephant stampedes past the sound man all crushed on its foot.
That was the Ark. Man, Doctor Who will not be back next week.
Oh, my God.
So episode 4.
Oh, God.
As I said, because all it made me think was, we're 700 years in the future and they've got the same vehicles. Nothing has changed.
Nothing's changed at all.
No. Nothing's changed. The only reveal you get at the end of episode 3 is you do find out that the monoid statue is, in fact, the fusion bomb.
Oh, fuck off. Why would you put it in a giant statue? Why? No one, as we find out later, one can fucking move it. So why put it in there? They needed a giant to do it.
It is the way of the monoid.
Yeah, it is. Oh, my God. Because they want to recreate that bit from Scanners, right? The scene from Scanners where his head explodes.
That's right.
What if the monoids at one point go, do you know what? This is a ridiculous idea. We better obviously diffuse that. Oh shit, no, we can't.
We can't reach it.
We can't diffuse that. It's going to take another 700 years to diffuse. Fuck's sake.
Oh god. So yeah, so the bomb, the head bomb, that's what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
They want to escape, and so in the kitchen they sort of lead a revolution thing where they sort of Ferris Bueller one of the people in the kitchen.
Who then gets killed?
Immediately. Yeah, that doesn't work. Is it Yaharis? Is Yaharis the kind of Quisling one? Is he the one who's secretly likes them? Yeah. So he then turns up on the planet, and once again, he's just like, he gets steamed to death in an instant.
In an instant.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun. Mm. And then the fourth monoid reveals where the bomb is, that it's in the head of the statue. Of course it is.
Yes.
But they can't, like you say, they can't move it because they all say it's too heavy. Because it's what? It's like the size of the Empire State Building, surely.
Yeah.
Mm.
This one's too heavy.
So what do they do? Well, it turns out, luckily, as has never been mentioned, I don't think, the Rafusians, as well as being invisible, are super strong giants.
Yes.
Yes, they can do that as well. And they say, we will take the monoid statue down to the docks in Bristol, and we will push it into the water.
So that's what they
do. There will be a revolt.
Yeah. So this is the first statue toppling, and they do it. It goes out into the space, and it explodes.
Hooray.
Yeah, I know.
Hooray.
And all throughout episode 4, there's constant... Earthlings coming down on the ship like they're being delivered by Amazon in this weird little pod. And then the monoids come down, and then they go back up, and then they go back down. And there's like 9 shots of just little shuttles going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Which is sort of baffling.
Because there's been like a little mini sort of monoid insurrection between the two sides, haven't there?
Yes, Monoid 4 challenges Monoid number 1, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And then that leads to them all shooting at each other.
Yes. Yes.
The monoids also have some infighting, and it's done in fast forward, and it looks really funny.
Yeah.
Oh god, yes.
Yeah.
It's like little Benny Hill monoid moment.
Well, there's that horrible bit where that one monoid, he accidentally rips the toga off of one of the other monoids, and they're wearing stocking suspenders and a bra. Yeah. And then they wag their finger at him and then chase him around a tree really fast.
He's got his Union Jack boxer shorts on.
Yeah.
And he slaps one ball monoid in the head, and his ping pong ball falls out and lands in the mouth of a vicar.
Lands in the vicar's tea. Who I see? or he hits the back of the monoid so much the actor swallows his own eye.
I have to wait until that comes out, and then I'll be a duoid.
Come out as a brown snooker ball.
Jonathan. Ready? It all starts off so simple, this whole story.
Great idea.
We've arrived, we've created something, and then it just descends into, I don't know what's going on at all now about anything.
Well, it descends into the usual kind of society metaphors and allegories that who usually does. But I really liked the idea of, like you said earlier, Tom, them being the baddies, them bringing the evil.
Yeah.
And then them having to sort it out. That was a really good conceit. But it dumps it in episode 1.
Yes.
And then runs off with this bollocks.
When they're being, suddenly they have to, the Rafusians are like you say, that's all very confusing, and there's infighting and everything else. Luckily, they basically, all the monoids are wiped out apart from 4, who sort of just wants, and then the Rafusians say, oh, you can live with us, on the proviso that you all learn to live together. Because thank God the Rafusians are super giant, super strong, very wise, benevolent creatures.
Invisible, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be having a dump, and then there's something like, are you having a nice dump? Oh, I didn't know you were in the room.
You've just found a nice cave for a little bit of alone time.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing? Oh, Christ!
You'll go blind.
Like we did.
Could you wear a bell or something, just so I know when you're around?
The doctor's like, you can see each other though, right? And he's like, no, not even that. No, it's annoying.
Can you close your eyes?
It is a wretched existence.
Yeah.
Can you sleep? No.
No. Do you do anything? No.
No, really. We built this place for you, so that's nice of us, I guess.
Kill us, Doctor. Kill us now. Kill us now.
The only thing we can do is sigh. Lift up large statues. Oh, that's handy, because...
We are the removal men of the universe.
We are the Pickfordians.
Yeah, luckily, I mean, it's so lucky that the refusings are literally there to solve every single problem.
It's almost like they're like been written in to write them out of a problem that they've got with this statue idea.
Yeah. They do the classic, Doctor, how can we ever repay you for I don't know what?
Ooh, a bluey.
I had my eye on that toucan in episode 1.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, they...
I mean, that brings a whole new meaning, the Doctor putting someone's eye out, doesn't it? Just getting a blowy off a monoid.
That happens in a Serbian film, doesn't it? The guy has sex with someone's eye socket.
I've not seen that.
I wouldn't rush to.
No. I mean, you sold it to me.
So. Yeah. And then the Doctor and Dodo and what's and Stephen, isn't it?
Stephen.
Sorry, it's so memorable. The assistants in this that I forgot. So then we get them in the TARDIS, which I like. I always love a bit of 60s TARDIS because then Dodo comes out in a lovely fetching 60s outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Looks very cool. And she's like, "What do you think? Is it gear? Yeah. Is it topper?
Is it happening?"
Yeah. And they're like, "It looks great." Then the William Hartnell sneezes and sneezes himself invisible, and then it's the end.
Yeah. That's just that's a Gallifreyan orgasm.
Yeah. because obviously this is back in the 60s, but they sort of always used to throw forwards for other stories, didn't they? That was what they used to do.
My heart sank at this point because I thought, oh, there's not another episode, is there? And then I realised, no.
What is
the next story? Oh, is that the next story?
Yeah.
It is, yeah. And okay. It doesn't exist.
And is he invisible in that for like a period of time? Or is that just, no, I'm back now, it's all fine.
I'll be honest, I've not, because it only exists, I think, on audio, or I've neither read it nor seen it. I'm sorry, Who fans.
Got you.
For letting you down on that one, but yeah.
Oh, well, there's the arc then.
And that was the arc.
Mm. I enjoyed it though.
I think it cracks along in a way that I was surprised by. It is a fun watch because the monoids look proper alien, and I think that is good.
I was going to say they look like better aliens than, like, again, we are going to see years to come. It's like, well, yeah, you made an effort there. That's quite ingenious thing. Guys. Shove a ping pong ball in some poor guy's mouth. And it's really fun because they basically wear green sleeping bags, don't they, with like massive flippers on the bottom.
It
must be a nightmare being a monoid.
Mm. It took me a while to realise that, they don't have like two legs. They have like, they're sort of stuck in a dress, kind of.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, like a skin dress. Yeah, it's very weird.
What are we going to score it? I suppose it has to be ping pong balls.
Ping pong balls.
How many ping pong balls out of 100 are we going to give it? Do I have to go first?
Mm-hmm. Your first time, yeah.
Okay. I enjoyed it. I did. It's annoying, and there's so many kind of hooey tropes and everything, but it's very watchable. And there's some hammy acting. You've got Michael Scheer turns up for one episode
as well.
He does.
Yeah, good to see him.
Yeah, always fun to see him. So I think for 60s Who, I think it plays with some interesting ideas. I am going to give it, as it's 62, I'm going to give it 60.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'll go next, I don't mind. I enjoyed it because I'd never seen it before.
Yeah.
So just for that, you know, just like, and the idea is brilliant. We've turned up and we've created a pandemic, which is very telling. And then we have to go and sort it out. It's just such a shame that they ran out of steam with it and then said, oh, there's some invisible people, they can do everything. Bye!
Yeah.
And it just sort of runs out of its own steam. But I like the sort of mini monoid sort of mini revolution that happens as well. Weirdly, the Earthlings are sort of like forgotten about completely. It's a completely redundant storyline, and it's supposed to be the main storyline. It's all very odd, but the idea of like a benevolent race then going, fuck this, we're no longer going to be your butler. We're gonna rule. It's great, and that, and I think Hartnell's really good fun in it. They're not the best of companions, aren't they? It's not their fault. It's just they're just not very memorable.
Yeah.
But I'm around about the same. I'm going to give it. Do you know what? I'm going to do exactly the same. I'm going to follow Tom's lead and give it 60.
60.
Eyeball ping pong balls.
I don't think John's going to match us on this one.
I don't think he is.
Okay. Well, I'm going to echo exactly what Paul said. I think it's a great story idea. Mm. And if they could have stretched 4 episodes out, the fact that the cold is getting worse and worse, and maybe developing into like flu and things like that, all basic stuff to us, but alien to other cultures.
I thought it would have been a brilliant idea if the monoids then caught the code and that's the reason they became refusions or something, and then the doctor's like, he didn't by actually interfering, well, by turning up and creating the code, he actually accelerated the monoids. It could have been a really lovely episode like that, and you've been like, oh, that's cool. But no, they don't do that.
But I thought the minute they got into the TARDIS and went and then came back, it was ruined from then on as a story, because you've taken all the tension out of it in a way.
Yes.
So did you really want it to be a one-parter?
No, I wanted the story from part one to be the story for all 4 stories.
Yeah.
But the way it jumps about, and like I say, it's just 3 episodes of fumbling, I thought. So I'm going to give it 45. Because I did enjoy it.
That's all right.
It's not like I hated it. Mm-hmm. I just got frustrated that there wasn't enough fuel in the tank to keep it going.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay,
hang
that's
on.
Fine. That doesn't work. I've done my
maths wrong. It's a very, very basic maths, and I have done it wrong. It's 165 ping pong balls we've got there. Mm.
That's lovely. And listen, wheezing groaners, just be thankful that it's 165 ping pong balls and not 165 statues of the doctor sitting on his own dick.
See, we do have standards.
And there's Compton's correspondence, as usual.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, Ben lovely. Thomas says, The Ark. It's been a while since I've watched this one, but how many different regional accents does Jackie Lane go through in the 4 episodes?
Lucky she choose that. Oh, I got all cold. Yeah. Like, there is a lot of different...
There is. Swapping. Lucky she didn't lapse into Jamaican patois. They'd have had to restrain Billy Hartnell from taking his stick to her. Greg Newport says, The Ark. I like the concept of halfway into the story, the TARDIS goes 700 years into the future to find out how the humans get on. Second waves abound. Was Boris in charge perchance? First appearance of Mr. Bronson in Doctor Who 2.
Yes, that's true. Michael Sheard.
Yeah. Andy Elias says, The Ark, a.k.a. Chock-a-Block, The Next Generation, featuring the cast of South Pacific on Mogadon, playing Give Us a Clue with Tim Burgess, only his mouth is an eye because reasons. Plus, the Doctor considers an elephant and Peter Purvis stifles Dodo's sneeze like Albert DeSalvio would. Oh, yeah, he puts his hand over her mouth, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Becky says, The Ark, I like the Moonoids, and if all the Doctor Who monsters formed a Beatles tribute band, the Moonoids should be on drums.
Definitely.
And is there any more?
There's a bit of obviously they look a bit, Beatlesy, don't they?
They do. They look bloody stupid. Fantastic Mr. Ox says, The Ark. I really love the story. Classic warm 60s fuzziness. My favourite Hartnell. Very disappointed the Moonoids never came back. Take them away to the security kitchen is still the both the best and most unexpected line in the entire history of Doctor Who.
I love the idea of a security kitchen.
And just checking this. Darren McKay says, The Ark. Do the Moinoids have a security lounge, security toilet, security airing cupboard, and a security hallway? Although, to be fair, Enemy of the World had the latter.
Yes, it did. Someone was kept in prisoner in a hallway.
And finally, Nick H says, I bloody love The Ark. They really went all out with the scope and the vision. Pity about the security kitchen, though. There we go. So there's the correspondence.
I think we're kind of in tune with our listeners there, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think it's... I enjoyed it. I think it is... I mean, it's silly and it's enjoyable. You know, that you watch it to be a bit fun and a bit silly. And the monoids do look great. And it's a great idea. I've never seen the mouth used as eyelids again.
No. It's amazing.
Interesting. I don't know.
Just be thankful that they weren't doing handstands. That's all I can say.
Put a pair of glasses on it.
Yeah. Oh my word.
that one's smoking a cigar, I think.
Well, how do they all look like Groucho Marx?
Yeah.
that's good, because if they wear the Groucho Marx, then the other species is the silent one, isn't it? Curly.
Yeah, yeah,
called.
Harpo.
Oh, so yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
I never forget a face, except for in this instance. Wow. That was the arc. Thanks, guys. This has been lovely.
Mm-hmm.
How do we end these?
Well, we usually say keep following us at Wheezing Pod.
Oh, yes, at Wheezing Pod. Mm-hmm. We got a lovely cartoon, didn't we, done this week?
We did.
Oh, that was nice. Amazing.
Yeah, really like that. So any more of those things to keep us buoyed and keep us in good spirits, then they're always appreciated.
Also the Anthony Ainley one. I mean, it was...
Delgado
looking at Ainley's book of... Not Ainsley. Ainley's book of fannies.
Hello, Jill.
Yeah.
That was great. And we also we sort of got confirmation from Matthew Waterhouse online.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes, he said he hadn't seen it, but he's heard about it.
He's heard about it.
He's seen it.
Of course he's seen it.
That's why he had to leave.
Forced out because of the big book of fannies.
Yes.
Now I'll never know what that fanny looked like.
It's going to be. I love the fact that it's this podcast is slowly turning into sort of a serial, but for one specific item.
It's turning into like a true crime podcast. About a sexual pervert.
Yeah. Written by Chris Chibnall.
Yes.
We have flying fannies at some point.
Yeah.
a Chris Chibnall joint at the end. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, God.
I'm not smoking that. Yep, there we go.
There we go.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
See you next time on Wheezing Pod. Goodbye.
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 The animals went in two by two. Hurrah, hurrah. The animals went in two by two. Hurrah, hurrah. The animals went in two by two, the elephant and the kangaroo, and they all went into the ark for to get out of the rain. The animals went in three by three, hurrah, hurrah. The animals went in three by three, hurrah, hurrah. The animals went in three by three, the wasp, the ant and the bumblebee, and they all went into the ark for to get out of the rain. Went in four by four, hurrah, hurrah. The animals went in four by four, hurrah, hurrah. The animals went in four by four, the great hippopotamus stuck in the door, and they all went into the ark for to get out of the rain. The animals went in five by five, hurrah, hurrah. The animals went in five by five, hurrah, hurrah. The animals went in five, by hunting each other they kept alive, and they all went into the ark for to get out of the rain.
Hi, I'm Keza McDonald.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
And this is our new show, Extra Life.
It's basically us talking to funny people about video games.
When I was a kid, it was Grand Theft Auto.
The Sinclair ZX Spectrum.
We talk about the games people remember from when they were kids and what they're playing now.
Guitar Hero.
The Last of Us 2. Combat on the Atari 2600.
No, I love Pokemon.
Anyway, find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Extra Life.
GreatBigOwl.com.